Hi, everyone in podcast land. You knew this day would come. I knew we were going to have to do The Matrix at some point.
We had to.
It's too good.
It's a classic.
David, what do you give this movie out of 10?
I'm giving it a 9.4. I keep expecting my rewatches to ruin or date the film, but I just keep on saying, whoa.
Damn it, I was going to say whoa in my...
whoa.
I don't do decimal points, so I gave it a 9 out of 10. And my slogan is, the movie that taught us the only thing that's really real is the friendships we made along the way.
All right, guys, I'm giving this movie also a 9.
Wow.
After watching The Matrix, I'm covered in more goop than Neo in that egg pod.
Jeez,
I love
Louise.
This movie.
Ooh, that is not an image I enjoy.
Covered in the goop of dead people.
Yeah, what kind of
blended up dead people
are we talking about here?
It is, isn't it? Okay, before we get into that, a message from our sponsor, PIA, Private Internet Access. They help you hide your true IP address so you can bypass geo-restrictions and censorship if you live in a censorship place. You can connect up to 5 devices at once, and it includes an internet kill switch if your VPN gets disconnected involuntarily.
Ha-cha!
It's available for Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and even as a Chrome extension, so check it out right now at lmg.gg/CarpoolPIA. CarpoolPIA.
Oh.
CarpoolPIA.
That's what the kill switch sounds like. Ha-cha.
Oh, no, I've been killed.
All right, The Matrix, guys. It's a classic, as I said.
What if I haven't seen it?
Well, let me tell you, I got a synopsis for you. It's been a while. I mean, like, I went into this movie being like, wait, what happens again? I know they're in a computer program or something. There's goop involved.
I learned kung fu at some point.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen in a while, we got a synopsis for you, okay? Here we go. Computer programmer Thomas Anderson, known in the hacking scene as Neo, is contacted by a woman named Trinity and a man named Morpheus, who offer to reveal the secrets of the Matrix, while all are pursued by mysterious suited agents led by Agent Smith.
Mr. Anderson.
That's what he sounds like. Morpheus offers Neo a red pill to reveal the truth, and a blue pill to return him to the status quo. Neo chooses the red pill, his reality disintegrates, and he wakes up in a liquid-filled pod among countless others attached to towering mechanical structures. He is retrieved and brought aboard Morpheus's ship, the Nebuchadnezzar. As Neo recovers from a lifetime of physical inactivity in the pod, Morpheus explains that in the early 21st century, humans waged war on intelligent machines, eventually blocking out the sun to restrict the machine's access to solar energy. But the machines actually won the war and now use humans' bioelectric power, keeping them pacified in a shared simulated reality, the Matrix. The agents are actually sentient computer programs that eliminate threats in the Matrix. Also, death within the Matrix kills the physical body, because the body cannot live without the mind, so that sucks. The humans re-enter the Matrix to visit the Oracle, a prophet who can supposedly verify Morpheus's belief that Neo is the One, an especially powerful human prophesied to free humanity and end the war. She implies that Neo is not the One. Before the group is ambushed by agents, Morpheus allows himself to be captured so the rest of the crew can escape, but Cypher exits the Matrix, murders several crew members, and is about to pull the plug on Neo when he is killed by surviving crew member and official best boy, Tank.
Love that guy.
Love Tank.
Does anyone know that actor's name? No. He's amazing, man. His face is, he's just so charismatic.
I think it's
Marcus Chong.
Marcus Chong. Anyways, the agents interrogate Morpheus to learn his access codes to Zion, the last human city in the real world. Tank proposes killing Morpheus to prevent this, but instead, Neo and Trinity re-enter the Matrix to rescue him, where Neo performs feats comparable to the agents. Morpheus is rescued, he and Trinity exit the Matrix, but Neo is ambushed and killed by Agent Smith before he can leave. As a group of sentinels attack the Nebuchadnezzar, Trinity whispers to Neo that he cannot be dead. The Oracle told her that she would fall in love with the One, and she loves Neo. She kisses him, and Neo is revived with the power to perceive and control the Matrix. He effortlessly defeats Smith and leaves the Matrix just in time for the ship's EMP to disable the Sentinels. Then we see a time jump inside the Matrix, where Neo tells the machines their time's up before he flies off screen like Superman.
Wow, what a great
synopsis.
Okay,
this movie has one of the sickest first hours ever.
Yeah.
It's such a trip. You don't know what the hell is going on at all in this movie at the beginning.
Yeah. This is one of those movies that if I could go back, erase my brain, and watch it again for the first time, this would be probably the top of the list.
Oh, like Cypher.
Yeah.
If I for could sure. just
I want to know nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Ugh.
I think a lot of it is from just like because there's so much world building in the movie. I think there's like so much information thrown at you. I think that the first time you see it, you're like, what is this world?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
I love the way they kind of explain the Matrix piece by piece. They kind of slowly give you just a little bit of information at a time. Like, they don't start with Morpheus explaining the Matrix is a simulation that's controlling everything. He's just like, the Matrix is everything. It's the chair.
But they
right?
build
it's
it,
the sky.
They build it up way before that, though, with so much buildup. You have so many questions. Like, you're like, okay, how does he know where he is right now? Like, he just gets called. No, first, even before that, first, his computer just starts talking. Neo's computer just says, wake up, Neo.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, subtext, wake up, Neo. And then you're like, okay, how does he...
what? Oh, you mean like it's telling him...
He's telling him to wake up from the Matrix.
To literally wake up, but also wake up from the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I just took it the second way the first time. So when you were like, literally wake up, I was like, yeah.
Because he's sleeping.
Yeah.
He's sleeping. And then he does a bunch of... One of these things I noticed is like, he's like, what the hell? And his computer's talking to him. He goes, there's a B-roll shot of his keyboard where he's like trying to hit escape and stuff. He hits control X.
Yeah.
That's cut.
And I was like, what? What are you trying to cut? I was like, where's the control alt delete? Some hacker.
I guess people weren't computer literate enough back then that X seems more like a closing button.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was doing there.
That's
probably
that.
Exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The guy in charge of the second unit or whatever who needs to get all those close-ups are just like, oh, X does something, right?
Oh, maybe he just, they're like, yeah, just hit the keyboard a bit. And he just had muscle memory from hitting control X because that's a common one.
Was Keanu Reeves a big, it probably wasn't Keanu Reeves' hands.
It might have been. He wasn't that big of an actor at that point. He'd done like some big movies, but he didn't have a bunch of momentum like today.
Because sometimes they use other people's hands for those close-up shots and whatnot, right?
Yeah. Sometimes.
I'm asking you, the film guy.
I don't know for this one in particular, but...
Anyways, we're staying way too long in this.
And then you go... Anyway, then you. By the time you get to the scene where he's in his office, he's in his cubicle, staring at this monitor that's just off. He's just staring at it. And then a FedEx guy gives him a phone. As soon as he pulls it out, it rings. And he's like, Morpheus? And then the agents are chasing him through the cubicle, and he's like, do exactly what I say. Go. Now, that whole part is so tense.
Oh, it's so good.
And he's like, and we are right there with Neo, whereas as confused as him, Neo's like, how do you know all this? And we're like, we don't know!
I think that's what struck me on this rewatch was the fact that it works really well as just kind of like a thriller, like a techno thriller, before we learn all these kind of like reality-destroying concepts, like, oh, none of what you know is real. Like, before that, he's just a guy trying to escape the feds and, like, a terrorist is helping him or whatever.
But they
you know?
Maximize the confusion, though, because he goes through the office, right? And then Morpheus eventually tells him to take the scaffold to the roof. But it's a hard climb. And this is the beginning of Neo's character arc where he doesn't believe in himself and he doesn't commit to anything. So he literally says out loud, like,
I can't do this.
How did I get involved in this? What am I doing? I'm nothing. I'm nobody. And then he gets apprehended by the agents, right?
Yeah.
Then he gets interrogated by the agents who... That interrogation ends with his mouth getting physically closed, like the skin closes over his mouth.
Iconic.
You're sitting there in the audience like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, what's happening?
What is this movie?
If you don't know about the Matrix going into this, it's just like, is this like a supernatural thing? Like, what is happening?
No idea.
It's fantastic.
Okay, question for you. Would you rather have your mouth closed shut for 5 minutes or that shrimp inside your belly?
Oh, I'll take the mouth closing.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't know.
That 5 minutes?
That bug they put into
no
his belly
stakes
button?
There.
5 minutes of mouth closed versus shrimp forever.
Just don't talk for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine.
We can breathe through our noses.
Yeah.
Does someone plug my nose or something?
I'm saying that the choice there is obvious.
Oh, you would choose, okay, so an hour.
Are you saying, okay, what do you think? What the fuck? David, what to you is the worst part of the mouth closing? Like, the action
the
of
worst,
the...
No, the worst thing in the world would be David not being able to talk.
I need to talk.
I have so much to say. I have so much to say.
Having your mouth like it, you don't know. There's no context. Your mouth just melts over itself, and then all of a sudden you have no mouth.
I think
that's pretty friggin' scary.
That's very scary. It is. I don't think that the mouth closing really was painful. Whereas when he gets held down and that like weird robotic shrimp thing goes into his body, that looked painful. And then it's in you, man.
Yeah, dude.
It's swimming around in you. Once my mouth closed, I might be panicking, but I'll be like, okay. I don't need to eat for at least an hour. Like, I could just figure this out. But that thing is huge, and it's in him. Like, where
if you
is it
really,
going?
If you really had to, you could probably drink through your nose.
This is my life now.
They're connected.
What about through your butt? You can absorb some stuff.
Yeah, you could absorb some stuff. Honest, yeah, some nutrients.
Or alcohol.
You could put some nutrients in your butt.
Okay. Then he just wakes up back in his bed. I have some problems with that.
There's
we'll
so
talk
many.
About
later. There's like okay. I think it's only two times, but it's like something's happened, and then he wakes up in his bed, and he's like, "Was that a dream?" And then he wakes up in his bed again, and he's like, "Wait, was that a dream?"
Yeah, he wakes up like
is
three
times.
Is
this the movie Inception? Before Inception
it
came out?
It is Inception. It's so similar in a lot of ways. That one scene in the middle when Morpheus is walking him through the simulation and he's like, all of this isn't real. It's all in your head. I was like, this is the Matrix. This is the Inception scene with Leo walking Ellen Page through.
Right,
like,
right.
I've actually seen YouTube videos where they put the Inception dialogue over that.
Oh, it's so
really?
Similar. I only caught it this time, but yeah.
Man, I will say that like they throw so much information at you in that middle section, but it never really feels like it's just like super exposition heavy.
I feel like that's where the movie slows down for me.
It does slow down. It does slow down. But I think like while I was watching it, I was just impressed that I wasn't bored because I knew all this information already. But the way that they present it is just like it's in all these different scenarios. Like he learns about the programs and how he can like load his brain with stuff. And then that happens. And then he jumps from there into the Kung Fu dojo where he learns a bunch of stuff. And then from there, I think before that, actually,
it doesn't slow down
street.
Until about the Oracle section. I was like, my friend came over. We were going to watch it. It's probably like 9 p.m. And we're like, yeah, let's chuck it on. How long is it? I asked Google how long it is. Google says it's 2.5 hours. I was like, Google's wrong. Wait, shut up.
You thought it was longer?
No, man. I thought it was like 1 hour 40.
What?
That movie's 2.5 hours?
It flies by.
I thought it was way shorter than that.
I watched it in I cut it in half, so I didn't really experience that.
Well, let's back up a bit to the ride in that first act where when he takes the pill and then he wakes up, that is a crazy scene. That is like a cinema defining scene. That is like it changed the whole paradigm of society.
Changed the game. Now we can film people in goop pods.
It's so awesome. Yeah, yeah. He wakes up. He sits up. He's covered in goop. He's looking around. And he's got the first thing he does is gag out that big tube that's going down his mouth. Ugh.
I can imagine like seeing that for the first time. You're like, whoa, is this a dream? Like, is this just some sort of weird hallucination he's having?
It's so visceral. And a lot of the CG in that scene does hold up. Like when he looks over and sees the thousands, tens of thousands of pottery pods. Yeah.
And the music's just epic. Yeah. Oh!
Then the robot squid appears, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a 1999 robot squid.
It doesn't look bad, though.
Oh, it looks bad.
I don't think it looks that bad. I thought the Sentinels held up okay, because they're usually in low light, like it's dark and reflective.
That helps a lot.
See, I find I could really tell from light reflections. There's a few scenes where, like, you can just tell they hadn't developed like ray tracing or some level of like light bouncing, and the tentacles just aren't lit correctly for how it would be in there, and I found it distracting.
I mean, compared to other movies at the time, like, if you watch other movies that are 20 years old, I think they look pretty good. This movie looks pretty good.
I wasn't struck by the lack of quality. I mean, I think I always watch these movies like knowing that this is 1999. Like, I'm not expecting photorealism in the CG.
I just think compared to the rest of the CG that does hold up 100%, like a lot of the 360 cameras around the people, like those kicks, like some of the crazy fly through the air.
The bullet time
fully holds up.
The bullet time wasn't CG. That was all real.
That's what I mean. But it's like it's all stitched together and like
around him is CG. The cityscape all around him that you see, that's all CG.
But
that's,
and nothing. So that to me that holds up really well. And like obviously some of the shockwave effects of the bullets don't. But yeah, I found the robots particularly distracting on this rewatch.
I love when he's sitting there and he has all those tubes in his arms and he's looking at them and you're like, oh, that's weird. And then he reaches behind his head and grabs that big master plug that's in his brain. He's like,
the feeling of horror.
And it's such a great cut. It's like right when his fingers are about to touch that big robot comes up. Okay, that's one of my first gripes, though, is like this thing sees him. It like scopes him out. Sees, oh, this guy woke up. Well, time to ditch this dude, liquidate him, pull the plug on his tube. All the liquid drains out of his little pod. He slides down some ramp into a sewer.
Yeah.
And then that's where the Nebuchadnezzar is there and picks him up. But it's like,
don't the machines know?
The machine, you know that people are waking up. You know there's human resistance. They know that. That's the whole point. The agents exist to stop that happening. And yet, how do you think they're being woken up? They're like, this is the mechanism. Like, why doesn't that robot just stab them first or something?
Yeah. So that is a plot hole until they kind of explain it in the later movies.
But how did they explain it in the later movies? I don't remember that.
Well, do we want to get into I mean, if you haven't seen the Matrix trilogy by now, what are you doing with your life?
I don't know about spoilers. I just don't really want to go into the retconning later movie territory.
Well, who knows if it was retcon? Maybe the Wachowskis had this plan from the beginning.
What do they say?
This whole thing with Neo and the One and the Prophecy. Spoilers. Okay? Spoilers, guys. This whole thing with the one in the prophecy has happened six times.
Right.
So the Oracle is one half of a duo.
Like a duality.
The other part of the duo is the Architect. The Architect represents order, and the Oracle represents kind of like the human element,
like
chaos. And so things are in a delicate balance. So they allow some humans to exit the Matrix, and they allow them to rebuild Zion. And then every once in a while, Neo, like, kind of like the one comes along, and they have the whole thing plays out, and he gets to the end, and then they reset everything. So this is the sixth time that the one has awakened, and the resistance finds him, and blah, blah, blah.
How
that
did
stuff.
They think that was a good idea?
I gotta watch those sequels again, because I was probably like a teenager and didn't actually understand that. Like, some of that was news to me just now.
See, this is so interesting. This is why I love the world building and the lore and stuff, because like the reason that happens is because the machines originally tried. I think Agent Smith says this, or does he not? In this movie, he says that the first Matrix was paradise.
Yeah, he says that in this one.
The first Matrix they tried to build was absolute paradise. Humanity was supposed to be happy all the time. It was a disaster. No one accepted it because they're like, this can't be real. And then the next one they made was like complete crap scenario. Everyone hates their life. It was called the Nightmare Matrix. And then from there,
how do you know about that one? Is that referenced?
I forget if that's actually
in the
movie.
It's not. They
okay.
Only, no.
So after that, then they were like, all right, we need a balance. So then the third iteration of the Matrix, they kind of had this whole like, all right, we're going to let some people fight against the system and let them escape and then fight back, and it creates this balance. Yeah.
That totally takes away from the resistance being like something special if it's just like the robots allowing them to exist.
Well, this is exactly the kernel of why people hate the sequels at all, because they don't need to exist. This movie ended with that sick Rage Against the Machine track.
Oh,
and
man.
You're like, boom, perfect
so
movie.
Good.
Don't need to see anything else.
Wake up, sheeple. Come on.
It's a totally Led Zeppelin riff.
Yeah,
it's totally like enclosed, discrete movie. Do not need a sequel. But they did it.
Once you know that he is Robot Jesus.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Doesn't need a sequel.
It does not
he
need a sequel.
He flies off in the end. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Bring on the Matrix 2.
Yeah, but then the Matrix
let's
2
go!
Is not what you want, though. You're like, the thing is...
Well, sequels are never what you want.
That's not true.
It's just that the next logical step of like, now he can fly and shit. It's like, well, what they did with the movie is exactly what would have happened. Like, now he's kicking ass. He's way stronger than the agents, and he can fight 200 of them at once. And it's like, that's great, but it doesn't have the same feel or
escalation.
Vibe.
Escalation.
Yeah, but then they update the agents to 2.0 with dreadlocks.
Yeah. What? No.
Those aren't agents.
No, what are they?
They're past agents.
Oh, are they?
Some
the dreadlock guys in Matrix Reloaded?
Oh, yeah, and Seraph was an agent before, too, from a previous version of the Matrix.
I don't even remember who Seraph is.
Seraph's he's the dude who's like, you don't really know someone until you fight them. And then Keanu Reeves is like, you could have just asked.
Do you know what?
I don't remember that.
Do you know why I think The Matrix, part of why it's so good and so iconic, is that it's related to our world. And it's a story about our world using a sci-fi lens.
Mm.
But once it loses that and becomes pure sci-fi, it's becoming really boring, generic sci-fi.
Right.
And like, I don't care about the robots outside of The Matrix. I don't care about this post-apocalyptic world with robots fighting humans. Like, I've seen that hundreds of times in movies and books.
Yeah.
And this, like, that's not interesting. What's interesting is The Matrix. And when they start to lose the focus on that, and they resolve, like, in the first one, you're right, James, they resolve the Matrix story in the first one, then that story is done, and they either need to tell a new story from within the Matrix. But when they expand it and grow it out into Zion and all these things, and like humans having guns that fight the robots, like, it's just so boring and generic. And so
like they'd have guns.
Well, they say that our only weapon against the robots is this EMP, and that's such a more interesting stake of like, we can't fight them, we can disable them, we can stop them, but like, we're helpless. And like, this level of power is so much, like, that dynamic is so much more interesting than we have mechs and guns and this and stand with 1,000 mechs versus 1,000 robots.
Hey, that was the era where you like had big battle scenes, you know, like Lord of the Rings, Troy, like. You just need to have Narnia series. You need to have two armies on both sides, and they have to clash.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want to come back to the EMP thing. But I agree. I agree that the first movie is the most interesting because it explores those ideas. You know, AI and like the nature of reality and all these things. Like, can you trust your senses? What's real? I agree that it's most interesting. But then seeing him fly off, I'm like, okay. We've established this. Now I want to see some robot battles, you know?
It was perfect. The age that we were when it came out, that was perfect for us. Because then you can watch a sequel and be like, woohoo!
Yeah.
He's kicking ass like Goku.
It also like established a really cool new franchise Did you guys ever play the game Enter the Matrix?
Yeah,
I played the game. So good.
With Niobe.
And just like the lore and the world building, there's so much to play with. It's like, yes, you need those kind of like deep themes for the first iteration, but then like you're launching this franchise that's like awesome. Okay, wait. Now what I wanted to say about the EMPs.
Yeah.
Why did the machines win the war if EMPs just kill them immediately?
Well, it's because they're probably like, it's like a last resort thing. Like it, we don't really see the Nebuchadnezzar after that. Maybe it like fucks them up for like the next 3 months and they need to repair and like they're out. It's like, maybe
I just mean,
it's a, such a high stakes thing that they only have a couple of those, that level of power of EMP.
I just mean, well, every ship has one.
Maybe not.
And I'm assuming
it's on,
that
it's on a cooldown.
This is Morpheus' ship. So he's like important. So he has maybe
they
one of the
all
best
got
ships.
EMPs, all the ships.
Well, in the future ones, because they all have everything and guns and they need to escalate.
Okay, wait, but my point here is that during the uprising, during the initial war, when the machines are, you know, and they're fighting each other, they haven't taken over yet. We got EMPs. We got EMPs now.
Maybe they didn't have them.
The machines would never take over. What do you mean they didn't have them?
I don't know.
I gotta say, scientists that are developing AI, please include a kill switch in your AI program.
Yeah.
Just, we know how this is gonna go if you don't. So just, yeah. Just
have you guys seen the Animatrix?
Yes.
Have you seen like the Second Renaissance?
Oh, so good.
Or, yeah, it's sweet. It shows the war with machines. That's awesome.
Man, I wish that we had more of those scenes of like, I like the Scyther. Fuck, what's his name? Siler?
Cypher.
Cypher. Mm-hmm. I always forget. I think he's the Pokemon.
Played by Joe Pantoliano.
Who's great. And I think he's one of the grounding pieces of why this movie is interesting, is his arc. I love that scene when he's with the agent and he's just like eating the steak and he gives that monologue like, I know this isn't real. I know it's just my brain sending signals, but like, ignorance is bliss.
And you hear that harp?
Yeah.
And he expands on that later when he's threatening all of them. He's pulling the plug on Apoc and Switch and just making all the lesser characters die in order of importance. And he says that the Matrix is more real because here in the real world, I just pull the plug on Switch and she's just like, she looks like she's sleeping and now she's still sleeping. But in the Matrix, you have to watch her die.
Oh.
I never really picked up on that before. That
yeah,
was,
me neither.
That's kind of cool.
And I feel like as I get older, I understand him more. I'm like, I kind of get it. Yeah, like if I could be ignorant to like all the struggle and all this and just have a good life, like,
oh, totally.
Yeah, I'm on there. Like,
but he's getting put in as a rich guy.
Theme. And I think this movie is a little scattered in its themes. Like, there's so many incredible ideas that I wish, like, maybe they laser focused in on, like, a few of them. But I like this idea of, like, rich versus the poor, where he's like, well, yeah, it's like, if I am rich, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't have to worry about what the poor are doing, what, like, the suffering are doing. I don't have to worry about that. It's just like, I'm fine, so that's good. And, like, I wish they could explore that. And I don't know. I just love that
classic,
scene so much.
It's the classic viewpoint of, like, if it doesn't affect me, then who cares about it, right? If I'm totally like living my great life,
that's
why
way better than eating the same goddamn goop every day. Speaking of the goop,
it was basically Soylent.
I love the attention to detail. Oh, it comes out of that tap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the attention to detail in this movie. Like when Neo pukes after he gets told about the Matrix.
Yeah.
Oh no, let me out. And they
he's gonna pop.
And then he pukes that just white puke. Just
yeah,
<bleh.
laughs> yeah, and that's like, all yep, it comes.
That's what they eat. Oh, there's another sweet attention to detail thing. Remember that program that Morpheus brings Neo into? The one with the woman in the red dress?
Yeah.
So when they shot that program, which is not the Matrix, it's like a program written by Tank or someone or humans.
By Mouse, I thought.
Yeah, he designed the red woman. Anyway, they're in that program. They shot that scene with a bunch of extras, and a lot of the extras are twins.
Yeah,
you can see people walk by. Like, there's a dude that walks by, and then, like, a few seconds later, you see a cop, that same dude dressed as a cop, giving out a ticket.
Yeah.
So there's, like, basically duplicate character models, because it's supposed to feel like this is a very limited program, and there would be looping things.
The Wachowskis really freaking hit this out of the park, and it's kind of funny to see how their subsequent attempts have just not ever gotten back to
it's
this
like,
bar.
How did they get this lightning in a bottle this one time?
I have a feeling that a lot of it wasn't them. It was them having this incredible idea. And I don't want to take away from them because they obviously had an incredible idea, an incredible story to tell. But I think it was probably the pressure from people they were working with and the producers and the studio kind of like focusing their ideas into this presentable film. Because all their later movies have really good ideas. Like even like the worst ones, like Jupiter Ascending, it's really interesting and there's cool stuff.
Oh, is it?
But it's just like a shotgun approach to like interesting ideas. It's like how many interesting ideas we can get instead of exploring right. one and developing one.
I feel like it was also kind of the time that this came out in. Like the 90s was just this like wonderful time where you could be cringe and weird and like out there, and it's just kind of like, whoa, that is super cool. Like we're into like new metal, like people are wearing coats. Leather jackets yeah, and yeah. dorky glasses
and identity stuff. Like when he meets Trinity in the club and he's like, oh, I just thought you were a guy. And she's like, most guys do.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about the outfits. Do you think that if they made this today, they could get away with all this leather?
Never.
You'd have to do it. I think you could.
You'd look like a lame edgelord.
I think you have to do. You wouldn't be able to step away from that fully, but you'd have to modernize it and make it cool.
I think that they could have got away with, like, Neo's costumes aren't that egregious. And really, neither are Morpheus because he's just such a cool guy. Like, he pulls it off. Like, there's so much buildup about who Morpheus is. And when they finally show him, you're like, whoa, it lived up to the hype. He's got these weird glasses. He's got this gap tooth thing. He's got this cool shaved head. And this leather jacket's sick. It's got that weird, like,
no, totally, but, like,
thing.
How much of that is the fact that we're familiar with it? I think if they made a movie now, if The Matrix had never came out, and The Matrix came out today, and they're wearing, like, leather trench coats and, like...
I watched The Matrix with someone in 2014 who had never seen it before, and she was like...
Yeah, exactly.
But exactly. So I went into this viewing with that in mind, and the only character whose costumes I think really embody that sentiment is Trinity. Because she's the only one really wearing glossy leather that's like super shiny.
That's the problem.
And plus, she's a woman. So it's like, here's another heroine wearing like tight leather. So that kind of is stale now.
Yeah, we don't need more. What's the video game character? Blood Rain?
Oh, yeah.
Tight leather wearing female femme fatales.
Fatale, I believe. But she doesn't tamales? Have like huge cleavage or anything like that. And she's got short hair and stuff.
Yeah. Cool. I think it was wonderful for me to step back into like the 90s frame of mind and like watch this movie and be like, this is awesome. Like just like forgetting for a second to evaluate this movie as if it was like a modern movie. I'm just like, I just like regressed to the 90s and I was like, this is so cool. Yes, Rage Against the Machine. I love it.
They're touring now.
Why is she wearing high heels though? That doesn't make any sense. She's in The Matrix with high heels on. She's riding motorcycles with high heels.
Because they hurt more if you kick them.
She learned how to fight with them.
I guess if the whole thing of The Matrix is that your mind is getting to the point where you don't really feel some of the boundaries of the physical world, then it's like maybe she's advanced enough to like, yeah, I can do whatever on my feet.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, though.
You just have to think about running and it
happens. That reminds me. Last weekend, we went to this VR experience, zero latency VR thing.
How was that?
So it's basically VR, but you're wearing it in a backpack and you're in a big room. So it's completely wireless and there's like eight people or whatever. One of the first experiences we did was you're in this weird topsy-turvy world where I'm walking on a narrow path, but that path like corkscrews.
Oh, jeez.
And like you're walking up a wall, kind of like an Inception where the world bends over and they're walking straight and then they're walking 90 degrees like straight up.
Really?
So that kind of stuff happened. And I'm looking over this edge, right? Like there's just sky around me. And I know that James is just standing in a room with a flat ground. And I could easily step over there. But my body won't let me, right? Mm. And I was like, whoa, this is exactly what Neo is experiencing during the jump program. He's like, okay, free my mind. Yeah, I know it's not real. But he still can't run and jump because it's like everything is just telling him not to. Yeah. All that programming. And I was like, wow.
But he does it.
No, he doesn't. He not jumps the off time. The building.
He runs and jumps. Oh, but he doesn't believe.
Yeah.
Doesn't believe enough. Yeah. That's a huge element in this movie that I really enjoy. Like Morpheus, his faith in like Neo as the one, and like how the movie even, like we know having seen the movie that it's justified, but then the movie causes you to second guess it when he goes to the Oracle and he's like, I'm not the one. And she's like, I'm sorry. And you're like, whoa, is this whole thing just a game? Like is Morpheus just a crazy guy?
Well, it's kind of weird because... later you learn that the Oracle just tells you what you need to hear.
Yeah.
So it's like she just catfished him and was like, she like reverse psychologies him into being the one, like to take the pressure off or something.
Yeah,
but it's so weird because she's straight up with everyone else's Oracle predictions. She just tells Trinity, you're going to fall in love with the one. She tells Morpheus, you're going to find the one. She's just blatant with them. But with Neo, she's like, no.
She tells people what they need to hear.
There was a deleted scene. Like if you look at one of the original screenplays, when Neo is talking to Cypher just one-on-one and he's saying, oh, this place sucks. Cypher tells Neo that he's the fifth, the one that Morpheus has found, and all the previous ones, when they went and fought an agent, they just died.
Huh. I love that scene. I love when
So you have way more doubt about Morpheus.
No, that's such a good scene too, because Neo has like just been kind of like being handheld by Morpheus, and then he has that conversation with Cypher, and then you can see in his face, he's like, oh no.
Even more
maybe
than
I should
that,
doubt.
Though, like the foreshadowing in this movie is excellent. Where when Neo is like, oh hey, and he turns and he's like shocked. It's like now that you know
Whoa,
that he's a
you
traitor,
scared the bejeebus out of me, and then he clicks his screens off.
And like when you know that he's a traitor, like oh yeah, that's super clear. But the first time you're just like, oh yeah, everyone's tense. It's weird. It's whatever.
You can act. There's foreshadowing in the very first scene. The movie opens with like you're zooming into the phone number or whatever, right? And you can hear a call between Cypher and Trinity, and you hear a weird noise, and Trinity goes, are you sure this line's clean? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally clean.
It's brilliant.
Cleaned it myself.
Yeah, but I don't know. There are a few plot holes, though. Plot holes.
Plot holes.
One of the biggest ones is like, how do the agents not know where they are at all times?
This bothers me.
Because earlier on in the movie, after the mouth closing part, after the interrogation, Buddy Neo wakes up in his bed, right? So they're just like, hey, whatever his consciousness is experiencing, you break the continuity, he just wakes up in his room. They can just put you wherever they want, right?
Right.
But then they don't know where he is at all times.
Or did they bring him there?
They don't. So they put the tracer in him. That's how they're tracking him. But then after that, they don't know where they are, and they have to use the eyes and ears of people.
But they would know where they are because it's just a computer program that they create. So they would know what they're putting in front of the consciousness of whatever being.
I think I'm willing to suspend my disbelief far enough that the humans have developed ways of cloaking where their positions
are. Okay, I'll grant you that.
They do say that they're like hacking into the Matrix.
Yeah.
So it's
Neo is not free yet. He's just in the world. So even if I grant you that, David, they put the tracking bug in him, the literal bug. And then I think he has a phone call with Morpheus where Morpheus is like, this lion's probably compromised, so I must be brief. Meet me at this place. Like, go under the Adam Street Bridge, right? So that's a bugged phone call. He literally has the bug inside him. He goes under the Adam Street Bridge and gets picked up by these rebels, Trinity.
Yeah,
and
why weren't there agents
there? There's no agents waiting for him. It's like, okay.
Well, I think my assumption is that they're trying to go deeper into the cell. And so they're trying to, like, play it undercover and, like, get further and get as much as they can out of it. The agents and, like, the Matrix. And they're just not able to... They haven't prioritized him as a target, so they're not... prioritizing like having the agents constantly watching
him. But they have though, because in the very first scene, once Trinity like goes through the phone and disappears, and they're standing among the rubble there, they're like, the agents say they have their next target, someone named Thomas Anderson, and we have to put a search out for him. And actually, there's a sweet edit there. It goes into the phone. We come out through some. The camera goes out through the text that says searching.
Right.
Because it's like the agent's like, we need to search. Then the camera comes out of this word on Neo's monitor. It says searching. Mm. But it's Neo doing a search of his own for Morpheus. I was like, wow. The writing is so sick. Yeah.
I love film.
It's great screenplay.
You know, honestly, this is kind of sad because like knowing that this is all just kind of like controlled chaos that's being allowed by... the machines just kind of ruins the movie.
Shh, don't tell me that.
Well, because it's not real. It's like, okay, wait, why don't the agents know exactly where everybody is at one time? It's probably because the machines are restricting the powers of these sentient AI programs in order to allow this chaos to unfold at a certain level. Because this bothered me. I was like, if the agents are part of the system, they should have access to like admin tools. They can just like see where all users are at one time.
There's
and like
no
restrict
point.
Access.
None of that is part of the story. The bottom line is that they need to make it a good movie. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that The Matrix really works as a standalone movie before you get the sequels. It's great, but I'm saying that now, watching the sequels, knowing that this is the case, it's just kind of like, oh. But I was thinking that while I was watching this movie, I'm like, why can't they track? Because that's a plot hole. If you haven't seen the sequels,
I thought about it too, but then I think I'm just willing to like suspend my disbelief that far. Where like if they're able to track them everywhere, that's just not a good movie.
Well,
or like
no, for sure.
But I love.
But that's a bad.
I do love the rules of the agents that they're not they don't have limitless power, that they can't just appear anywhere. They have to appear inside a person and like take over that. Right. I really like that.
But
like
even with that, there's still some holes there, because later on near the end of the movie, when it's just Neo in the Matrix and he's in that subway and then the homeless person turns into an agent, it's like, okay, they have eyes everywhere. If you're in view of a person, right, they can get you. But then in the first scene that the agents are ever introduced, where it's like he's talking to that cop, and he's like, no, Captain, your men are already dead. That part, it's like, why didn't these agents appear as the cops that are beside Trinity?
My guess is that those cops the cops are kind of controlled by the Matrix, and the Matrix ideally is like, don't just kill people. Don't just sacrifice people for no reason. And okay, it's only when they're desperate that they're like, and they're chasing Neo because he's like the biggest target ever. That's fine.
Like Inception, where the subconscious gets kind of angsty if some weird things happen. But if that's true, during that same chase where they're chasing Trinity and all the cops are jumping over buildings and stuff, she does a big jump, then the agent does a big jump, and then the normal cop is like, that's impossible. So what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Well, they do an impossible thing in front of these normal people.
Yeah. No, but they're not killing them. I'm saying that they can't just like, be like, oh yeah, there's a police officer right by Trinity, I'm just gonna take him over and kill him and take over.
Oh, you think that kills them?
I think so.
What do you think happens when
No, it doesn't kill them.
Do you ever just see an agent leave their body?
Well, the only
That doesn't mean that person's still in a pod somewhere. They have to, their consciousness.
Yeah.
I just assume they wake up like Neo just woke up. Just wake up later somewhere else.
There's not really a danger that the agent is gonna die. That would make sense, because if the agent takes over the cops, like in the first scene where they're surrounding Trinity, an agent takes over a cop, and then say Trinity kills the agent, then the guy dies.
We have seen in like the lobby fight, that part of the movie, an agent dies and he goes, and he turns and back.
They revert back to their old...
But yeah, I guess that's an interesting question. What happens if an agent leaves your body without killing you? Maybe they can't. Maybe they need you to die.
That would make sense. I think I was like liking your theory there until we got to the point where it's like, wait, normal people normally can't kill agents. So it's not really a risk for them to take over other people's bodies unless the people die when the agent leaves.
We don't know how many agents have been killed. Morpheus only says every person who has stood their ground against an agent has died. He never says that no one's ever killed an agent before.
But my point remains that clearly it's very hard to kill an agent and they rarely die. And even when you
unless you go dodge this,
yeah,
what is that?
You have time to say dodge this, but he doesn't have time to dodge.
I found this post on the internet on like Sci-Fi Stack Overflow or Stack Exchange, where someone did all the math of like, okay, this agent is like 50 feet away from Neo, and Neo's using this type of weapon which shoots bullets at this. The bullets travel at feet per second, and he dodges this many bullets. You can count him shooting, so therefore his response time is like this many milliseconds. Then Trinity goes up and says, dodge this, which takes like a second and a half. And it's like, he could have actually dodged it like 55 times.
Maybe the agent was just taken so by surprise. He's like, I didn't calculate this. So he didn't. He sees Neo take out the guns. He's like, oh, I'm going to have to dodge this. So he's prepared. But when Trinity comes up and puts a gun against it, he's like, what's that?
Yeah, it takes 2 seconds of preparation to engage your super speed.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
It makes sense. Guys, I love the Matrix.
My biggest problem with this movie is that love is the superpower that unlocks the win.
Yes.
God damn it.
Love
it's
it.
So stupid. Stop it.
It's love.
It's like, why?
I love it.
You're talking about how like Neo dies.
Yeah, so in
he's
the finale,
dead.
Neo dies. He's shot by the agent, and it's a great scene of like, he's dead, and you're like, holy crap. Agent checks. The people check. He's dead. And then Trinity has a moment. She's like, you can't be dead. It's not true, because the Oracle told me that I would love the one, and I love you.
Yeah.
And kisses him, and he's like, whoo. I'm awake.
Beep, 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 beep.
Well, comes back to life. And that is kind of expanded upon in the sequels, because it becomes apparent that like Neo has some power in the real world.
Stop
and stuff.
It. I hate it.
Did he you not know that?
I know. He shot the robot, but it's so silly.
I love
like,
it.
It's rule breaking.
It's the force.
It's world breaking.
They got the force. There's like some Buddha. There's elements of Buddhism stuff. There's like, it's an energy field, dude. Yeah, totally. I love it. There's a prophecy.
No, I think it was such a greater dynamic when in the Matrix he's the most powerful, but outside the Matrix they're just helpless.
Well, I think up until that point, most of it is pretty just like hard sci-fi, right? It's like, okay, we can see this happening. There's obviously technology involved at every level. And then that moment is like, oh, it expands the universe, because it's like, oh, there's some sort of force
in the real world.
That, or the real world.
Some sort of supernatural force that's not.
There's another layer of
Matrix. Yeah, exactly. Theory. Exactly.
Dude, one of the coolest
sci-fi...
Either
way, it expands the world.
One of the most cool sci-fi moments in this movie is when he gets to download all that knowledge. That's like one of those, you know how everyone has a lottery fantasy of like, if I win the lottery, this will happen. I think every nerd out there has had a fantasy of like, wouldn't it be so cool if he could just jack in and just go, jiu-jitsu? Yeah. I know jiu-jitsu. Yeah. That's so sweet.
No, that was so cool. Yeah. And they're like, he's been at it for like 8 hours
he's
or something.
He's a machine, 10 hours straight.
Yeah, 10 hours straight, just like downloading stuff to his brain. I was like, would that not just like fry your brain a little bit?
Who knows? I don't know. The electricity going through the tissue of your brain.
Maybe he went into a coma and the rest of the movie's just playing inside his mind.
There's a, when he gives him that first shot of knowledge, just like jujitsu or something, and he's like, whoa, more. And then Tank's like, hey, Mikey, I think he likes it. I always say that, but I don't know what the hell that is. So I looked it up.
Oh.
Do you know what that reference is?
No.
I looked it up. It's the thing. If you're older than me, you know, you get the reference right away. It's from this like Life cereal commercial from like the 70s or something like that.
What?
There's these little kids sitting at a table and then there's like, it's like oatmeal cereal. I don't want to try it. Give it to this, my little kid brother. He likes anything. And then so the little kid eats it and the older brother goes, he likes it. Hey, Mikey. And so I don't know why it's in this movie. I think
I
doubt that it was written. I think that the actor just ad-libbed it.
Oh, maybe. Because
he says it weird. He says, hey, Mikey, I think he likes it, which is backwards.
That brings...
And also, it doesn't make any sense because Tank says it and Tank's never been in the Matrix.
But maybe they... Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, where did he see this commercial?
I mean, someone could have told him.
That was a really cool detail. I loved that. That like... The operator for them all is like was not born in the Matrix, so he can't go in the Matrix.
Yeah, and it's so cool when he squats down and he's like talking about Zion. He's like, he's a good actor. He squats down, touches the ground. He's like, near the core where it's still warm.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
No, I love that actor. I like looked up his IMDb after and I was like, this guy's hardly been in anything since this movie. And also, his last name's Chong, so I was like, is he related to Cheech and Chong?
I thought he was Cuban. I have no idea.
Yeah, he's like Latino. I don't know.
He must be, because later on he's like, Neo, this is loco.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, there's a confirmation.
I guess.
No, I love that character. Can I just talk real quick about how Neo is like the perfect everyman? Keanu Reeves is, I mean.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Keanu specifically.
Like, I don't know why he's so likable, but he's so like...
He's like a shell that you get to
fill. Yeah, he's lame. He's just a blank slate and like... I don't want to say he's a bad actor because obviously like he's so engaging that the audience just like latches onto him. But the reason that they can latch onto him is because he's got like two facial expressions. So it's just like, whoa. And yeah.
Yeah. He's really good at like looking at you like he's listening and being kind of mind blown by what you're saying. You're saying I can dodge bullets. He's just like
his default facial expression perfectly conveys in equal parts confusion.
But engaged.
Understanding.
Engaged confusion. Yeah.
Introspection. There's so much happening there, that, but like when nothing is happening, that it's just like, oh, it's perfect.
A great example of that is when, remember when he's in the hallway of one of the final fights and Smith is like punching him in his arm? He's just fighting with one arm really fast.
Yeah.
And his face is just so placid. Yeah.
He's just like Nirvana.
Oh, but it's perfect though. I think there is more to it because he's kind of like amazed at himself.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah. I loved
it.
Yeah,
that's great. Ben, did you guys know some of the alternate casting choices for
Will Smith?
Will Smith.
That would have sucked.
And Sean Connery was the other Morpheus that they had lined up.
Oh, that would have sucked.
He would have been okay.
I think if they only got one, it would have been terrible. But if you got both, Sean Connery and Will Smith, it just would have been a completely different movie.
No. You can't have both. No. Yeah.
No, I would have loved both. I wouldn't. I think
you would have loved Will Smith and
Lawrence Fishburne and Will Smith. and Will Smith together. That's not a good combo. Or Keanu Reeves and Sean Connery. That's not a good combo, but Will Smith and Sean Connery, that starts to be kind of fun.
Does that have to do with their known level?
I think so.
Because, like, I had never seen Lawrence Fishburne before, right? So
this
it's like, if that door opens up, it's like, finally, to meet Morpheus. And it's like Sean Connery with little glasses balancing on his nose. I'd be like, oh, it's Sean Connery.
My guess is they probably tried to get Sean Connery and they wanted him. They just, it probably last minute, just the deal didn't go through.
You know how Will Smith has a YouTube channel now? Yep. He has a video up called Why I Turned Down the Matrix.
Oh, what did
I haven't,
he say?
I haven't watched it.
Who?
Will Smith.
Oh, Will Smith turned down the Matrix.
Apparently.
Oh, geez.
He's an iRobot, though, which a lot of people think is...
We all dodged a bullet there. Because Will Smith's Neo would be completely different. He'd be like cracking jokes
Comic
and stuff.
Relief would ruin the whole vibe of the movie.
Yeah,
But maybe he wouldn't have done that.
I mean, the story could work with a character who was like a little more kind of present. Like Neo is just kind of like, he's just being like taken along for the ride. Like he's like, I'm just a hacker guy and what's going on with all this stuff? Oh, follow the white rabbit, I guess. I guess I'll go over here and, we're in the Matrix? Okay, download the stuff in my brain, I guess. Oh, I guess I'll go see the Oracle. Like he has very little agency. Even at the end, he just dies and then he awakens with these powers, but like he didn't really do much to like get there, right?
But that's kind of part of his whole story. It's like, why is this happening to me? I'm not special.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that like Will Smith would be completely different because Neo is a perfect everyman. Neo doesn't really have any motivations beyond what like we need to project onto
him. Do you think
him.
They would have let Will Smith take it completely differently because he would have been a bigger name?
And probably.
This is kind of more
I doubt the Wachowskis would have had the ability to stop him from
It would
from
either
anything.
Be Will Smith being funny Will Smith or Will Smith trying to be Keanu Reeves, which is...
Because that's such a gravitas movie.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying Neo is such a perfect choice for this character because he's so blank.
Yeah, I agree.
Man, I think it would have ruined it, man, honestly.
I just got to give a shout out to Bill Pope, the cinematographer from this movie. This movie really holds up. It looks good. And I didn't realize, but like, I mean, I'm certain that he's one of the reasons why that movie is as good as it is, because I don't think the Wachowskis had that much to do with it. But he's the guy who did like Spider-Man 2, Team America, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh.
And then all the later like Edgar Wright movies.
There's a lot of reflection shots in this movie. Did you notice that?
There's too many that are CG. I find the glasses ones that are CG don't hold up super well. But part of it is that I'm looking for it. And
I didn't notice that. I'm talking about the shots like the shot you're looking into a doorknob at the Oracle's apartment, or you're looking into the rearview mirror of her motorcycle.
That's a CG.
Those are all CG.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, in the doorknob spoon? One, you can actually see the camera.
Oh, I don't know that one, but...
Oh, really?
It
looked CG. Maybe it wasn't.
Definitely the motorcycle mirror one is, and then all the glasses ones are, because you would just see the camera, and you can't.
Yeah.
But why do you think they used all those? Just because they could, or is it saying something?
It kind of gives it like a hallucinogenic feel to everything. You're just kind of like, whoa.
It's kind of surreal.
Can I see myself?
Matrix is like a reflection of the real world kind of thing. It kind of works thematically.
You know what I didn't really know? I mean, this is only like my third time seeing it in my life or something. I forget. But I didn't really notice this the previous times that I watched the movie, is that every time they're in the Matrix, there's a green tinge to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that the movie had a green filter on it, but I didn't realize that it's only when they're in
the Matrix.
It's
only in the Matrix, yeah.
In the real world, it's blue.
There's a few shots that they don't get it quite right. And you can tell this movie is made before digital color correcting was really a thing. That's kind of a more early 2000s thing. And you can tell there's a few shots that they were aiming for green and they just kind of get it wrong. Like the first shot.
It's just like a piece of filter that they put over the film.
It's probably like a lens or like a stock or something. Right. But there's certain shots, like the first one when he's in his boss's office and he's like, Mr. Anderson, you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And it shows the sky and him and there's no green. And it's just like they kind of just got it a little bit wrong.
Oh,
and they
really?
Couldn't correct it as much in post. Whereas today it would be easy. Like you just put a slider on and be done. But you can appreciate that even more, that it was film.
Yeah.
They had to actually do it in camera and fix it. And plan for that, not just fix it in post. It's incredible.
Man. I don't know much about like the other movies that were around at the time that The Matrix came out, but like I can't help but like watch this movie and just be like, this is just so iconic. Like I feel like it laid the groundwork for
sure. It was the hugest movie for like at least a 15-year period.
Yeah, like the I don't think. Do you think Inception would have happened if we had The Matrix? Maybe, but
I don't think Inception got to the same level.
No,
or a popular culture
saturation. Yeah.
So they're
making a sequel, The Matrix 4.
Are they actually?
Yeah,
already filming.
Yeah, with Keanu Reeves.
Oh yeah, no, I saw a clip on Twitter.
They didn't get Hugo Weaving. They wanted him, but the schedule
concerns didn't work out. That they wanted him.
Yeah,
because it's like,
agents don't age.
They're software. So why would you want old man Hugo Weaving? It doesn't make any
sense. Definitely don't want.
And I love Hugo Weaving. I want to see him. Yeah. He's never let me down. But
maybe they could say something like his software is starting to degrade or something.
I feel like no one gives him credit for Hugo Weaving fighting. He is awesome. He's so good. And
he's
that subway
so
fight scene, he's doing the fighting and he's like toe for toe as good, if not better, than Keanu Reeves. And like no one's ever talked. I've never talked to anyone about his fighting. It blew me away on this rewatch. I'm like, he's so good at fighting.
He's good at acting.
Why are you surprised by that though?
Oh, because he's kind of like.
How old was he?
I don't know. He seems older. Like I've never seen him, never really thought about him like actually doing the fighting. I just assumed it was stunt people. But like in that scene, he's doing most of the fighting himself.
You know what's cool is that he also conveys this fighting style where he fights differently than Neo. Yep. Like his movements are different. They're kind of more computery, I guess, and just bigger. Yeah. So it's cool that he's acting during the fighting.
He's used to being super powered. I think you really get that from the fights, that like Agent Smith is used to just obliterating people.
I'm going to throw this punch and it's going to land and hurt a lot.
And so the fact that Neo is like actually going toe-to-toe with him, he's kind of like, what? Yeah.
He had an injury, and so did Neo, or Keanu hurt his neck during filming, but Weaving hurt his hip earlier on, and they had to move. He was like on crutches. They had to move all the fight scenes to the end of production for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He was 39 when they shot the movie.
He is so convincing in fighting. And like so many actors of that caliber, I'm just like, they're okay at fighting, and you can just tell they're stunt people, but he's standout to me on this rewatch.
When he stands beside the other agents, Jones and Brown, they look like just like so much worse at acting than him. It's crazy. For some reason, he has so much more charisma than them that they almost look like parodies.
But I think that's intentional, maybe, because, I mean, maybe it's not, but I think it really works for me because Agent Smith is supposed to be this, like, you get a hint at this when he interrogates Morpheus by himself. He tells them to leave the room and they're like, well, that's weird. I think Agent Smith is supposed to be kind of more human than the standard agent, and so the other agents are like, what's wrong with this guy? And like Smith kind of like has a moment with Morpheus where he's like, I hate this place,
I need to get out,
the smell, and he's like talking about these things he wouldn't expect a computer program to really like think about. So
there's a theory
that he's supposed to be a little more, you know, he have more human characteristics.
There's a theory that Smith is the one and Neo's not.
Well, he plays a big role.
I haven't explored it.
Wait, which Smith, though, of the millions of them? I also want to say about the agents that, like, the juxtaposition of these, like, ultra-powered beings with guys that just look like they're, you know, I guess they look like they're government agents, but they also just, like, they're just wearing suits.
They're supposed to look generic.
Yeah, they look super generic, but they're, like, the most dangerous beings in the Matrix, like... I just loved that, like, it's not quite a juxtaposition, I guess. Sort of. I just thought that was amazing.
What do you think they should carry over from this movie into the fourth one?
Oh, right, the fourth one. Yeah, what is this going to be about? Isn't Neo dead?
Trinity is dead, okay?
Trinity, and
no one knows what happens with Neo. Doesn't he just get kind of plugged in onto, like, a bed of cables and then, like... become one with
I don't want
zero
any of
one.
That. I want them to start at zero again. I want them to start in the Matrix and have it be... like more like a Black Mirror episode where it's like you explore themes of the real world through the lens of the Matrix, and you have it be like someone becoming woke to it. And maybe like within the Matrix, there's now like a class divide, and you make it like about rich versus poor.
You
like
love rich versus poor.
I love rich versus poor.
Dude, it's going to be, they're making it because Keanu had a resurgence from John Wick. Keanu's hot now again, and he still kicks ass. So it's going to be Keanu Reeves kicking ass.
No, it has to be.
Hope not.
Yeah,
I want someone else.
That's you don't want Neo to come back.
I want him to come back, but I want him to be like the end of the second act. Like
it's not a cameo. He's gonna be a star for sure.
What if he's like the sage for like the next generation of the one?
Well, if he's kind of like the Morpheus.
Well, but this is what's really interesting about it is that at the end of the Matrix Revolutions, there's kind of like a peace. Like Neo talks to like the grand machine AI or whatever, the overlord or whatever, you know, the big boss machine, and they kind of like reach an understanding. And so that's how the movie ends. So it's like, are we going to come back into a world where humans and machines are at war? Is there going to be like good machines and bad machines? That would be interesting.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I think I want them to personify the robots a little bit better. In the real world, they're just like squids that are mean.
We're squids.
And I think like in the first one, they do such a good job of making Hugo Weaving like a person, a character, and interesting. And I hope that they do that a lot more for the real world robots as well. Like, I don't want us to feel bad for the real world robots. I don't want it to be like, oh, the robots are like, I kind of don't want like good and bad robots. I want them to be like more complex.
More complex than humans can even comprehend.
Did you see Altered Carbon?
Yes.
That's just a sequel. That's what happens at the end. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Because in Altered Carbon, people are only these like discs that they have in their spine.
You
can take yourself out of your body is just a shell, and you take yourself out of
your
skin.
Yeah, you can needle cast. You can shoot your consciousness.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, that's the end result of humans and machines kind of being like, all right, we're cool now. Now there's no difference between a computer program and a human. We're all just these little discs.
Here's a little factoid, which I think is so cool. In the Animatrix, you learn that the robot city is called 01.
Yeah, I love that.
That is so sweet.
That's great. It's a perfect name. What else would we call it? I don't know, something a little more creative. It's the first city, 01.
They're calling it Springfield. Well, I think that's it, guys. And although I would wager that most of our listeners don't like the sequels as much, I think we should do them. Not anytime soon, maybe like in a year.
Maybe later.
Yeah, we should do Reloaded and Revolutions separately. You know, in the future when there's like 600 Carpool Critics episodes, we'll do them.
Haven't I suffered enough, though? Haven't you made me watch enough dumb movies between Doolittle and
Sonic? You're the guy who
Sonic?
Wants to see all the ass-kicking Goku Neo stuff.
Yeah, not for this. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to see it and absorb it passively.
I feel the same.
With no conscious thought happening. Just as a pure experience. Light and sounds. Okay, we'll project them at me.
We'll live stream it then. Thanks for listening to Carpool Critics. You can follow us at Carpool Critics on Twitter. You can email us, carpoolcriticspodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up with questions and suggestions and just talk to Riley because...
Please.
He hates his life.
No one will talk to me.
See you next time.
Love you.